Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Trust me, I'm doing your eyes a favor.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 2, Episode 10, High Risk Behavior. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Greetings.
Hello, listener. Before we get into this episode, we want to tell you what's happening on Patreon. Again with this, episode 207 is going to be dropping this Friday. And since it is Friday, September 13th, we're going to dig into Kevin Williamson's breakthrough horror movie, Let's Watch Scream. As in the movie from 1996, not the TV show that was on for a while on MTV and was not good.
Mm-mm.
I think the entire original franchise, like I think the first three, maybe more. Anyway, at least the first one that we are going to be occupied with is on Max. We will link it in the show notes. And we look forward to digging into all the tropiness. I recall that being a really fun movie. So I'm looking forward to talking about it.
Yeah, me too. Saw it in the theater.
Yeah, I didn't, and I can't remember why. It's very off model for me. Yeah,
I was going to say, that's not very Tara, is it?
No, it's not. It's not. I don't know what I was doing in 1996. Being in grad school, I guess, like a loser. Let's get into this episode, starting with our B plot. Dawson and Jen make some tough calls on Dawson's new movie.
Mm-hmm.
We open this plot line thusly, clip 2.
I can't believe you're saying this. I mean, after all these years of hiding behind highbrow analytical posturing.
I'm saying it. I love you. I know it's nonsensical.
Nonsensical? It's insane. We've known each other for 15 years. You couldn't find some other time to Freudian slip this cat out of the bag?
I've wanted to. So many times. You have no idea how long I've been wrestling internally with the psychological repercussions of my feelings.
I need time to process. I mean, my electrical synapses are on overload here. My brain is telling me one thing, but my heart, it says another. It's telling me that I should consider the unequivocal, highly irrational, possibly damaging proposition of loving you back.
Wait. God, you missed a line. You forgot hypnotically scarring.
Okay.
Did he?
Yeah. The funniest thing to me is that the new writers in season two are like, can we just acknowledge how overwritten the show is? Because their spoof of Dawson's Creek dialogue in Dawson's script is very funny and mean.
Yeah. Unfortunately, like it's leaching into the ground soil of the show itself. But the other interesting thing about this scene is that Joshua Jackson comes so much closer to selling this absolute like thesaurus slaw than Vanderbeek does. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, I feel almost sorry for Vanderbeek. It's not fair.
No, it's not. So what we hear, what you can't see rather, is at the end of that, Dawson sort of leans in and it almost looks like they're about to kiss, but he's just reaching for the script. And because, no, Dawson was not declaring his love for Pacey, the two were performing an extremely overwritten scene from Dawson's new movie, both off book for the teehees at the idea that two boys could be on their way to becoming a couple. Hearty har har. Pacey tells Dawson if he wants his dialogue word perfect, he can get an actor, which Pacey is not. He also doesn't love playing the girl in the scene. Dawson asks if Pacey thinks it'll make a good movie, and Pacey joins the rest of us in complaining that there are too many syllables and teenagers don't talk like that. Dawson fishes for a compliment again, and Pacey obliges, but with a note. clip three.
However, you did make Joey a little bit on the angry side, even for her.
It's not Joey.
Right, that's not Joey. The guy's not you, and you're not dissecting you two's relationship on the page, just like every other narcissistic writer through history.
Just tell me what you think.
I think it's dark. It's obtuse. It's very un-Dawson Leary.
Thank you.
No.
Not what obtuse means.
No. It's not a compliment.
This is what I mean. You can't send up what you don't have down. Please.
No.
Please. Get a dictionary. Carry with you everywhere you go. Words have meanings.
Yeah, I agree. Like, the real dialogue is still bad, but the Freudian slip that cat out of the bag, it would not make it into one of these scripts. God, I hope.
Yeah. Oof.
Anyway, Dawson self-fluffs, saying this is the first time he's written something emotionally driven, and it's time he took some risks. And Pacey wants to know if that's what Dawson wants to do, why his leads don't have sex. He knows Dawson and Joey didn't, but Dawson can write the movie's story any way he wants. Clip four.
Take the risky plunge.
Ah, see, I have. How many movies do you see where a bunch of horny teenagers just go at it like rabbits? Huh? I mean, that's the safe choice. The risky, edgier choice is to have them not do it.
Only you take your virginal insecurities and your fear of deflowerment and turn them into risky, edgy behavior.
Okay, I have no problem being a virgin. All right, I'm sorry if my confidence and my convictions discombobulate you.
Discombobulate? How many syllables is that?
I don't want to wait.
They already hate Dawson, though.
No, it's true. I also think it's funny when he has to deliver a line there. I'm not ashamed of being a virgin, but like you can barely hear the word virgin because he's swallowing it so much. Like, aren't you or are you? Because,
yeah.
The next day, Jen and Dawson are at school handing out flyers soliciting auditioners for the movie and exposit that Jen has replaced Joey as Dawson's producer. Dawson makes sure Jen gets a flyer to a certain James Lowell that Dawson thinks would be great as the lead. Clip five.
Ew.
Ew. He's like the classic leading guy. He's kind of easy. He's funny. He's self-effacing. He's like Jimmy Stewart meets Tom Hanks.
Yeah, and about as sexy as a bucket, Dawson.
Okay.
And Dave Ficelli, that's the leading man.
Excuse me?
Yeah, he's like dark and brooding and Ray Liotta meets...
Sewer rat. No way.
I'm just saying he's got a certain appeal. I mean, people don't necessarily go to the movies to see their kind, sweet next-door neighbor. They go to see that slightly dangerous guy that they desperately want to sleep with but never will in real life. Sexy will always win out over nice.
Thank you.
I'm just saying that everybody casts Tom Hanks, you know? Try and make a less obvious choice.
So this James Lowell is like the cuter version of Dawson. And the other guy, Dave Pacelli, is like Jess Mariano before Jess Mariano. This is several years before Gilmore Girls. But they are obviously like the fact that we spend so much time about like this type versus this type. Neither of them auditions for the movie. We don't see them again after the scene. So that is kind of a weird choice.
Yeah.
Judging by Dawson's facial expressions, he obviously takes everything Jen is saying very personally, and he should. Inside, Chris sees Abby with a flyer and asks if she's going to audition, and I'm kind of surprised these two are still on speaking terms after the hot mic scandal of the last episode where she, like, shat on him.
Thank you!
But she also didn't say anything Chris probably didn't know she thought of him, so, like, I guess this is just, you know, game-recognized game situation.
Right. It's not like it would blow back on him anyway. He's tall. He fucks. His parents go out of town a lot. She can't really touch him. That's fine.
That's true. He's the perfect high school man. He's tall. He fucks. And his parents are never around. Well encapsulated. Abby has no intention of participating in Dawson's lame home video project, but Chris is considering it, saying Dawson's got financing, which is really putting a lot on the $1,250 he has. Abby doesn't think this thing will open any doors for Chris on the festival circuit and accuses him of having Brad Pittitis, but Chris thinks he could be a good actor. Can't be any worse than this kid I know named Jason Bear, and he's about to have his own show next year. But Chris mostly seems interested in the action that actors get, although why he thinks a Dawson production will be a nonstop party, I am sure I don't know. Like, Dawson was at your last party, and he fucked it up for you, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So when Chris finally gets around to asking Abby to audition with him, she stands firm, spoiler, for now. And then there's an audition montage, clip six.
I can't believe you're saying this. After all these years of hiding behind highbrow analytical possuming.
I love you. I know it's nonsensical.
Nonsensical? It's insane. We've known each other for 15 years. Somewhere in there you couldn't find the time.
I wanted to so many times. But you don't know how long I've wrestled internally with the psychological repercussions of my feelings. You don't know how long I've been struggling internally with my psychological reproductions.
But my heart says something different. That I should consider the unequivocal, possibly damaging, highly irrational, hypnotically scarring proposition of loving you back.
Cool.
These aren't the auditions for Pippin?
Pippin?
No. Literally what it says in my notes.
How did I know?
This is a last resort.
Yes. Yeah. This is also happening at school, and I don't know why the school would allow its resources to be used for this non-school project, but whatever. I guess they have to shoot it somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Dawson does have a stage at home. They have that weird, like, deck platform thing that they could use. Whatever.
Oh, yeah. Well, whatever. We also haven't seen Mr. Gold. So I guess Dawson's Creek's second season budget did not include people who are going to shit on Dawson's work. Oh, wait. But we'll get to it.
Not yet. So later it's Abby's turn, and despite her friendliness with Chris earlier, now they're paired together and she is bitching about it. Chris has a question. Clip seven.
I don't understand why they don't ever do it. I mean, you have all the hot foreplay stuff, but they never hook up.
Right. Well, see, your character believes that sometimes true love goes beyond that, which is merely physical.
Yeah. See, that's just the part I don't get.
Yeah, you know what, Dawson? I think you should rethink that part. It's a little heady.
Or not. I'm surprised that everybody is getting a copy of the entire script for this audition. Like, how else would he know they don't have sex?
Yeah.
That's a lot of paper.
Why aren't... And, I mean, was the school office's copier used for that, too? Because someone stopped Dawson.
Yeah. I guess he could be using the copier at the TV station, too. Those poor bastards. So Abby and Chris proceed, but then Chris ends the exchange by jamming his tongue in Abby's mouth, to which she did not consent and which she yells at him for. And as she does, he says he was just getting into the role. She thinks he was trying to get into her pants and storms off. And Chris takes a deep bow, and Jen and Dawson are like, "We're all set. Thank you." So when he and Jen are alone again, Dawson spins out that even with the money to make it, the movie might not happen. Jen says it's just like in the script, how he waited so long to be with Joey, and then when he was about to get her, he lost her. And then it's Jen's turn to hear that the script is not about Joey, and she doesn't buy it either. She adds that she thought she and Dawson had something special too, but she's been relegated to the first act. Dawson doesn't bother saying whatever character she means is not based on her, and tells her she was important to him. And she squints a little as she asks if she was. More than she knows, he says. And in that case, she would like to know what he liked about her. He says they had fun together, but as an example, he says skinny dipping didn't suck, which was in the last episode when they were not dating. He says she was sexy, past tense, which she notes, so he corrects himself. And so once he's softened up, Jen says she thinks Chris and Abby are right about the script. The lead should have sex. And Dawson's nostrils immediately flare and clip eight.
Oh, my God.
It's about romance, not sex.
Who says that sex can't be romantic, Dawson? Come on. I mean, look at your target audience.
I wanted to make the less obvious choice.
That's funny when you think about it.
What?
Just that if you hadn't gone for such an obvious choice of girl, maybe the ending to your script would have been a little less obvious.
Which girl is she saying is obvious? Joey? Joey is, I think, not the obvious choice. They were platonic friends for their whole lives.
Yeah.
Jen was the obvious choice.
Yeah, but Jen is also, I mean, is Jen the obvious choice because we're conditioned from Dawson's Creek to think this way?
Right, right.
I just, yeah. I mean, and this is also, I understand that Jen is now the officially like world weary, I'm 15 going on 50 character here, but like there is really a lot of big talk about romance versus sex from a group of people who collectively have done capital I it, I don't know, 14 times. I distinctly remember this episode and the to be continued at the end and the big mystery between the episodes of who did it, but I didn't remember this first part being so full of dead air and just even for Dawson being this repetitive.
No, it's true. So eventually it's nighttime. Dawson and Jen meet up on his lawn. He tells her he's lucky to have her as a friend. He never could have gotten through those horrifically epic auditions without her, which I think epically horrific, again, your point, that the fake bad writing is becoming the actual bad writing.
Yeah.
Jen laughs that after hearing the audition scene so many times, if he gets really desperate, she could be his leading lady. Dawson thinks maybe she should have been, claims he thinks that a lot. And when we cut back to them, she has turned the conversation back to the script and resumed the argument of whether it's riskier or left less obvious for his characters not to fuck. And by the way, if you have a drinking game where you have to take a sip every time they say risky or obvious, you are dead at this point, this episode. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty quickly, she seems like she has wandered away from the script, though. Clip 9.
I think that intent and motive is what makes sex so interesting, Dawson. I mean, why do two people have sex, okay? So they're in love. That's obvious. Who cares? But they're in lust. Slightly more interesting. They're hurting over someone. They're in pain. Trying to forget someone. They're in denial. They're looking for a distraction. All of a sudden, sex has just become very interesting. And not the obvious choice at all.
Drink!
Especially when it's Dawson. Not the obvious choice to me.
No. Also, I understand saying, like, when she's talking about motive is important in sex, like, if you mean motivation in the sense of the script characters, yes. But saying motive makes it seem like a crime. Like, such a weird word to use.
Yeah.
She says he's still got time for a rewrite and wanders off, leaving Dawson looking confused. And when we see him again, he is, in fact, in bed working on that rewrite. He pulls a framed photo of Joey out from a nook in his nightstand and puts it back on top before highlighting the whole script and deleting it, which is so dramatic. Just start a new draft. Save shit. There might be stuff that's salvageable. Waste not, want not. Then Jen's asleep when Dawson climbs into her window, and clip 10.
I've been thinking about what you said about motive and intent, love versus hurt versus lust versus distraction.
And?
Kisses her.
Don't ask my motive.
I know better.
I mean, ew, but also, to your previous note about motive versus motivation, like, now it seems like there's a felony happening, which given your ages, there might be. I mean, you know, they're both teenagers, but still.
Yes. And as Sarah alluded, this coming in between scenes of two other couples that we are about to get to, because of the way we do this podcast, you're not hearing it happen as it did in the episode. But, you know, most of the Jen Dawson stuff is sort of siloed here because of the movie stuff. So anyway, when we rejoin them after scenes with those two other pairs making out, Jen and Dawson are still making out too. And we don't know how far they went.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This Independence Day, wrap yourself in comfort and freedom with Minky Couture. From stars, stripes, and snuggles to cozy classics, our luxury blankets are proudly made to comfort. Whether you're watching fireworks or hosting backyard barbecues, be proud to be cozy all summer long. Celebrate comfort. Celebrate freedom. Celebrate you. Shop now at MinkyCouture.com and make your 4th of July unforgettably cozy.
And here we are at the A-plot. The McPhees get more intimate with their love interests, current and potential. And we start here as Pacey comes up schmooping behind Andy at her locker and hands her the results of his HIV test, clip 11.
You got tested?
You told me to.
But you argued with me.
Andy, I always argue with you. It doesn't mean I don't listen.
And?
And it's negative, which is positive in my book.
Congratulations. I'm proud of you. Getting tested was very responsible of you. I just don't think that, you know, now that you got tested, that we're going to, you know.
What?
You know.
No, Andy, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay, you know, we haven't been very, physical or anything, and I'm not opposed to us becoming more intimate, but I just want you to know that everything's at its perfect place and time, okay?
I didn't get tested to engage in any uninhibited scrumping with you.
Ugh, come on. I know you're on a network, but scrumping? Good God.
Ugh. Also, why did you get tested then? Shit's a pain in the ass.
Also, if you have to just keep being like, we're not gonna, you know, it's like, well, that's why you're not doing it, because you can't even say it.
Yeah.
Pacey says, to answer your question, Sarah, that he got tested for himself and he's not in a hurry to have sex with Andy. She immediately switches over to dismay that he might not find her attractive enough, but of course it's not that. They go on, clip 12.
You don't want to?
Do you want to?
I asked you.
Well, I'm asking you back.
You first.
I'd like to scrump with you any day of the week. Okay, but we don't have all the time in the world. There's no need to rush into anything.
I know. I hear you and I concur.
Good.
Good. But if it were the right time and place, you would want to, right?
Oh, hell yes.
Okay.
I mean, he's perfect. You kind of can't argue with it, but
no,
you should, because boys aren't like this. Boys aren't like that.
No. Again, the damage this show did to a generation.
Yeah.
Cannot be overstated. Outside school, Dawson runs into Joey. He indicates his papers to say he's organizing movie auditions. She is working on a project for art class, having moved on from fruit bowls to nude model. Dawson, despite all the maturity we had to keep hearing him say he had in the last episode, is very childish about it. Clip 13.
And he just poses for you?
Yeah.
Do you find that uncomfortable? I mean, just sitting in a room with some guy completely in the buff right in front of you?
No.
Does he, like, talk or anything?
Oh, yeah. He sings, tells jokes, does a little soft shoot. No, he doesn't talk, Dawson. He's a model. He sits there. He just takes breaks every now and then.
And little Joey Potter doesn't blush?
No.
Not even a little?
Maybe a little.
Just a little?
Okay, I've broken 12 pencils, but it's getting better. You'd be surprised, Dawson. I'm changing. I'm not little Joey Potter anymore.
No, you're certainly not.
I fucking hate the little Joey Potter shit so much.
I hate it so much also. And there's so many of them between us and the end of this project. Sigh.
It's true. And Joey, just because he says it doesn't mean you have to say it back. Like, maybe start the process of phasing this out of your lexicon, please.
Although her delivery on, okay, so I've broken 12 pencils was very funny.
Yeah, sure. But, you know, it's for her to say, like, yeah, it's awkward, not for him to be like, it's not awkward. Like, ugh, fuck off.
Well, no, I agree. But it's like, there's just something about the way that this is written also that, like, if this is your hero, why do you keep doing this to him? Mm-hmm. Why do you keep having her trying to act normal and him dawsoning? Maybe they just don't know how to write themselves out of this problem. Spoiler, they don't.
No, it's true. They kind of never really do. So Joey watches Jen give Chris a flyer and observes that Jen is his producer now. She asks what the movie's about, and Dawson's extremely vague to cover the fact that it is quite obviously about the two of them, despite what he keeps telling everybody. Later, Jack joins Joey, who immediately covers up her drawing after his initial peek. He assures her that he's seen a naked guy before, but not one that seems to have been drawn like a child, she says. He insists and thoughtfully compliments her shading. She looks dubious, but he goes on with more specific praise right up until he knocks his drink all over it, because you remember, he is clumsy. He babbles apologies, but she doesn't stay to hear them. Later, he finds her at her locker to resume apologizing, which, no, she could not save it. There's nothing he can do either. It's due Thursday, and she's already the youngest and least experienced student in the class. Now she's going to show up with an incomplete assignment, which, like, Jack asks if she can redraw it. She can't summon the model entirely from memory. And clip 14.
Let me pose for you.
What?
Yeah, no, I'm serious. Let me pose for you. No big deal.
You want to pose for me naked?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Let me think about that. No.
Well, okay. Okay, what happens if you don't turn it in?
Look, I get an F, not to mention embarrassment and feelings of tremendous inadequacy.
Okay.
Phrasing.
A. B. This is an extracurricular class. It's not going on your transcript. Like, what do you mean you get an F? Like, you're just being evaluated. You're not, like, getting properly graded. This isn't for school.
Yeah. I also kind of feel like if you, a teenager and a minor child, were like, I had to redo it. I used my friend as a model. He wore a bathing suit.
Right.
That they're not going to be that upset if every vein on little Jack is not present. Like, but I mean, whatever. I understand how storytelling works. Believe it or not. Not sure this show does, but for Jack to be posing naked for her is like, there has to have been some other way.
Yeah.
Could have just had a bathing suit on and then they could have started making it. I don't know.
Right.
It's dumb.
Anyway, the prospect of her failing just makes Jack more determined to pose, and she remains equally determined for him not to. He asks if she's freaked out about seeing him naked, but this isn't the first time she's been accused of prudishness and is not bothered. He asks if she's scared it could get sexual, and she laughs that not every moment with him is sexually charged, which is kind of a rude thing to say to someone you've kissed and who you went on at least one date with. But Jack just says there should be no problem and basically begs Joey to let him make this up to her. And she finally relents and he disappears into the crowd before she can change her mind again. And then the next day, Andy's at the drugstore having just refilled a prescription when she runs into Pacey, who does not respect her privacy and protests before he pulls out the bottle and reads that it's Xanax. This says she's supposed to take it twice a day. Okay. A quick Google tells me it's meant to be taken for an individual's specific therapeutic needs, not so much as a preventative. Like, if you're having a panic attack or you're about to experience something you know is going to be stressful, like flying in an airplane or giving a speech, it's not for that.
No. Also, the dosage is wildly, like, I think it's supposed to cap at 10 milligrams in a 24-hour period. This is like 20 milligrams per pill.
Right.
Yeah, which also we saw those pills and that's not what Xanax tends to look like. And it's certainly not interchangeable with other psychiatric drugs. Like this, I remember being horrified at how irresponsible this writing was at the time. And I'm still not thrilled.
Right. The other thing is, like, if she had bipolar, which is what Jack seemed to be describing in the last episode when he was like, your highs and lows. Right. A patient in 1998 would likely be on lithium, like not Xanax. Like they might have that supplementarily for, you know, specific instance. But anyway, whatever. Pacey tries to help the audience keep up. Clip 15.
Xanax, that's for severe depression and anxiety, right? It's like Prozac, so.
No, it's not.
Yeah, wrong, from soup to nuts. Like, just make up some drug name and do it that way. I mean, at the time, I remember feeling like I was glad that they were trying to demystify and destigmatize being medicated and stuff like that for a teen audience and to try to portray what this might be like for an actual teenager. And then being so disappointed that they just were completely not interested in any of the realities and like what certain drugs are for, what a teenager might have, like if there's hereditary mental illness, where is her fucking father?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I also think like in 1998, I mean, what do I know about high school in 1998? I was already fucking old by then. But like, I feel like kids would have talked about having depression and being on antidepressants, if that's what we're supposed to think is the issue here. But again, like I said, the way they were describing it before, it sounded more like bipolar. So they're just getting all of this wrong.
Yeah, basically.
Anyway.
Like a teenager is not going to get Xanax for... I mean, I was prescribed Xanax as a teenager because I was and remain higher strung than Stradivarius. couldn't get on a plane without it back in the day. But it was only for that. And my mother literally kept it under lock and key.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is, I mean, it's weird and exhausting. They're trying to do something and I respect the effort, but the execution is, as usual, D plus.
Yes. So looking very ashamed, we know she should not, but that's part of, as Sarah said, what they're trying to do here. She says her mother's name is also Andrea and the prescription is hers, and Pacey immediately accepts this explanation. So she changes the subject to what he's doing there, which is when we see they're both standing next to the condoms, and she reiterates that she is interested in Pacey's sexual side, you know, mostly the front probably. She is just not sure she's ready yet. He tells her to be prepared. Sorry. This is so dumb. Pacey tells her to be prepared, handing her a box of condoms. She is dubious that the designers of this variety could possibly know about a woman's pleasure, as the box promises. But Pacey points out they could have been designed by a woman. Yeah, grow up, Andy. Women in STEM. She asks if they should get some, because he's right. They should be prepared if the mood strikes. He's not sure she's serious, but she really is. And as they leave the store, Andy tells Pacey how she has envisioned her first time. Clip 16.
Like dinner at a French restaurant, a romantic after-dinner stroll by the dock, and then on to a nice historic bed and breakfast.
A bed and breakfast?
It's my fantasy. Go with it. Lavender candles and Sinatra, or somebody equally as old-style and romantic.
Okay. Scheduling bathroom breaks? Does the poor guy have to hold it all evening?
Okay, I'm sorry, but deciding to lose my virginity is a huge deal, okay? I mean, I didn't hold on to it for 16 years just to lose it in one drunk, fleeting moment in some skanky backseat of a late-model American car, okay?
Damn. Yeah, someone's leaking all my best lovemaking secrets.
Jeez. Okay, well...
Tough time for an American car.
I know, seriously. Look, a Honda Accord was perfectly adequate.
Since Andy will remember this night forever, she just wants it to be special. And Pacey ducks down to hold her. Such a cool, sexy move, as he says. He gets it and just hopes he can be the one to make it memorable for her. She says when he talks like that, he makes her want to jump him. And at least she doesn't say jump his bones. So I'll take it. And then it's time for art. Joey is nervous as a cat, getting her stuff in order and keeping her back turned from Jack when he comes out from wherever in a towel. He could go to the couch or the chair or just stand, or she could move. And he chooses the couch and says that if she's nervous, he can keep the towel on for a bit while she warms up. She claims she's fine and gets started until he starts to take the towel off and she stops him. And he reclines as if he has posed nude a million times, like just immediately falls into position. There's no like shifting around or whatever. Just funny.
No, there's also no towel on the couch. Like people, other people sit there.
Yeah, he at this point, he's still wearing it. Believe me, we'll get to it. When it ends up on the floor, I was upset. But anyway, he notes that this is just like that scene in Titanic. She agrees, but clip 17.
Except I'm Jack and you're Rose.
Role reversal. I like it.
It's almost like you're queering the art.
I don't know what you mean by that.
No, I don't either. I don't know why I said it.
Also, can I ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
This is happening concurrently with Andy's date that we heard described, I think.
Yes,
I don't think this was like another. Yeah, it wasn't a mega day issue.
Right.
So whose night is it with Mrs. McPhee?
Great point. We don't know.
Okay.
Maybe she got some extra Xanax and fell asleep for the next 17 hours.
Good for her.
Jack watches Joey's mouth tense up as she sketches and he gives her the chance to pull the plug, but she just thinks maybe they shouldn't talk and explains to the model in class doesn't. And also Jack and Joey are just getting to know each other. So she is a little uncomfortable and he muses, pun slightly intended, that they will probably be very comfortable with each other after tonight. And she looks like that might worry her most of all. Before hopping off her stool and saying this is going to work, she's been trying not to act like little Joey Potter, but there's a lot she's inexperienced with. Jack asks if she's sure, and she gets even more flustered, insisting she is, which is when she knocks over her easel. And when he gets up to help her, his towel falls off. And you can see the gif in the visual aids. She apparently gets an eyeful. Like, there's definitely eye flicking to where she's like, I saw everything.
Yep. So,
Jack covers himself with her drawing board and says he might as well stay now. And after the commercial, this is where we see he has stayed and is just lying all naked on the Potter family couch. No towel under him. Man, this is a common area. You have hairs. This is rude.
Yeah. I wear bike shorts under skirts and dresses as a matter of course.
Sure.
All summer, mostly it's because of that. Like, once you've seen what goes on the subways once, it's like you need more layers, and that's just how it is. It's like when people are on the plane in like cutoffs that show butt cheeks.
Oh,
it's like how
God.
They're so, it's just teeming with no, and I like watching him, it was like I'm enjoying looking at Kerr Smith. He was of age when this was filmed.
Yes.
Don't feel bad about that.
He was like, quite. He was like 27 or something, wasn't he?
Yeah. But I do feel a little bad for Bessie et al.
Yes.
Who, unbeknownst to them, yes, going to be sharing space with his unmediated giblets.
Yes. Alexander's trying to learn how to sit. He's going to be falling over into everything.
Mm-hmm.
Jack asks how it's looking. I assume he means her drawing. And Joey says it's good. Then backpedals so she doesn't sound too braggy, I guess. She herself is doing surprisingly well. This feels like an accomplishment since drawing him naked is something most people would not think Joey, referring to herself in the third person, could do. Her life seems kind of plain sometimes, but art allows her to take chances and makes her feel like she's doing something special. And he gets it. It feels dangerous because art's about a world of uncertainty and that makes it scary. She asks what scares him, and he immediately says, sex. And after a brief cut over to Pacey and Andy in a cloth napkin restaurant, presumably French, we are back with Joey asking Jack why sex scares him. It's not first time anxiety, as she guesses. He's not a virgin. She asks if he's had sex a lot, but it's just been the once. To your point earlier, people have had sex 14 times, and 13 of those were Jen. Not quite. Mm-hmm. After a cut to another scene, Joey asks if Jack's first time was scary. He says it was. She tells him not to feel bad. She's had sex zero times and it terrifies her from afar. Jack says it's hard to describe what it was like, stammering that he's bad at expressing himself, guessing that she has found his social flaw. She asks him to try to explain, and when we cut back to them, she suggests that he try to describe it as art. So, clip 18.
Well, at first, it's all a jumble of emotions. It's hard to pinpoint. It's kind of like expressionistic painting. But You know, if you get comfortable with it, it's like the first time you see Van Gogh's Starry Night. It's the same sky you've always seen, but everything is different. Bigger. More passionate. The blues, the yellows, the swirling stars. Everything has feeling. Movement. Even the colors seem alive. It's like lying on Monet's water lilies. It's the warmth of a George O'Keeffe flower wrapped around you, feeling everything so intensely. It's the power and strength of a Degas dancer. It's the passion of Munch's scream.
Oh, who wrote this?
I mean, that is a lot of art history to fit into an event that cannot have lasted longer than 7 seconds. Give me a fucking break!
If I may summarize, Van Gogh, stick your dick in it.
You may.
Everybody! By the time he got to "of Georgia O'Keeffe wrapped around you," it's like, we get it! Oh my god!
Yeah. Also more like George O'Keeffe. Am I right?
Spoiler! Yes. However, despite someone trying to show off all of the art cards they bought the last time they were at the Met, totally. I don't think Katie Holmes is that gifted generally. She's extremely good at playing horniness, though, and you will see in the visual aids it's a four-pack of her face, like, just looking very tortured by this entire speech.
Mm-hmm.
So it worked on its intended audience, which is not us, I guess.
Mm-mm.
So she gets up to get the phone and they both react in shock because I guess he has apparently talked himself hard. And elsewhere, Pacey is walking a blindfolded Andy into a hotel room at a historic B&B he somehow got a room in without a credit card. They already dined at a French bistro and took a blindfolded walk on the dock. So she says that if she's about to find out she's at the last stop in her fantasy, he is dead. And he takes off the blindfold and tells her to dispose of his remains now. Andy is overwhelmed. Clip 19.
This night was not designed to reach the verdict of doing it. I wanted to give you your fantasy evening, you know, a French dinner, stroll along the docks, bed and breakfast, romantic music. We can save doing it for another time. This is a step-by-step process. For me, too.
Oh, Pacey.
What? What's wrong?
I really want to do this. I mean, I'd be lying if I said I didn't. And you're really special to me. But, I don't think I'm ready for this right now. I mean, there's so much that's going on that, that you don't know about and that I can't even begin to tell you. And I can't do this. I'm sorry, Maisie.
Okay.
I can't do this.
What? It's, don't worry. It's no big deal. I told you. We can wait. I mean, honestly, I think I brought you here tonight as much for me as I did for you. I just wanted to give you your fantasy evening, you know? So please don't be upset with me. You have no idea what you've done for me just by being in my life. I mean, you make me feel like maybe there's hope for my pathetic existence. And I don't have to sleep with you to feel that. I feel it right now.
Said no teen boy ever.
Yes, exactly. The perfect teen boy does not exist except on this show.
No.
He says he's so lucky, and Andy says he makes her want to do it. Yeah, bitch, he makes us all want to do it. Get in line. It's long. When we rejoin Joey and Jack, he's apologizing again. Joey says things happen, though usually not like that, and not in the Potter living room. He doesn't want this to screw things up for him or make tonight sexual. Joey says they both had noble intentions, but they're both human and there's something between them. And then she's losing track of her sentence and apologizing back, saying it's her fault because she asked him to tell her all about that stuff. And he agrees that it was her fault, and their laughing breaks the tension. Tonight was a big step in the life of little Joey Potter. She just bit off too much and is wrestling with her hormones like everybody else. Jack's available if she ever wants to explore her curiosity. Finds it hard not to hold her and touch her, and he didn't realize that until tonight when it was forbidden. They slowly moved towards each other. Jack says this was a night of firsts and it doesn't have to stop. And they make out until the camera cuts to a shot of Joey's sketch and the figure's good. Still not nailing faces, as you can see in the visual aids.
No. No.
And then we're back at the B&B. Pacey and Andy are in bed making out when he breathlessly says he doesn't want to have sex, or rather he wants to, but he doesn't think they should. Andy says she might be ready. Pacey says that when she's really ready, she'll know and they'll do it a bunch. But if he doesn't rush things now, maybe they'll have some semblance of a real relationship. She can take all the time she needs. He will be here. Once again, this just makes Andy even hornier, but Pacey says he's going to take her home. Back to Joey and Jack, now making out on the couch amid all the pubes that he shed, presumably. Well... I didn't tell him not to put a towel down. We've discussed this.
Oh, my God. I'm just imagining just pubes sort of like flying off. Like it's a cartoon of like a sheep being shorn with like a little teeny buzzing noise happening at the time. Oh, God. Gross.
I was picturing the Looney Tunes witch who, when she runs away, like all the hairpins fly out behind her. That's like that. Outside the B&B gate, Pacey and Andy wholesomely hold hands and walk back to the car he's been driving her around in without a license. And we are leaving it on that to be continued. Oh, shit. Sarah, let's close up by naming our episode MVP. Daisy. I know it's boring to keep saying Pacey, but he is the best in the episode.
I mean, I know, but I am going to say Andy because she has inspired this idyllic behavior and good for her.
Sure.
I think it's going to pay off for her. Call me crazy.
Least valuable player.
Dawson.
Yes, very fair. I'm going to also say whoever thought, no, we don't need any kind of pharmaceutical reference book in the writer's room. We can just wing it.
Yeah, fair. Next time on Again With This, it's yet another contrived whodunit plot, but this time the it in whodunit is, you know, it. Although the real mystery is why the writers think Chris, of all fucking people, would give a good goddamn which of these other dingbats is getting it in.
That's a great point.
Speaking of getting it in, assume I'm talking about Visine in your eyeballs before you visit our visual aids. You can find those for this and every other episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com. That is also where you will find our complete archive of recap episodes, againwiththispodcast.com/subscribe, and where you can join the Again With This Club for extra episodes and access to our Discord. That is at againwiththispodcast.com/club. I'm hypnotically scarring Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is Risky Plunge Tara Ariano, and she's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, is not the obvious choice at all. Talk to you next time.
This guy Dawson sounds like a real loser.
Yes!
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Ever notice your dog slowing down and having health issues and wonder, what can I do to make them better? Well, my friend, add Rough Greens to your dog's food for 90 days, and I guarantee you'll see changes that will amaze you. Greetings, naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black, inventor of Rough Greens here, and I invite you to give your pup the Rough Greens 90-Day Challenge. In the first 30 days, you'll see shinier coats and increased energy. By day 60, your dog will have a stronger immune system, less shedding, improved joint function, all due to the live nutrients that you've added to their diet. And at 90 days, better digestion, reduced inflammation, improved heart health, and you may even have reduced their cancer risk. Fetch your dog a free Jumpstart trial bag today. Go to tryroughgreens.com. Use promo code TRYRUFF. That's TRYRUFF. Go to tryroughgreens.com. Use promo code TRYRUFF. You discover the shipping. You don't have to change your dog's food to improve your dog's health. Just add a scoop of Rough Greens. Discover the life-changing benefits of Meow Greens for your cat. Ever see your cat slowing down or having health issues and wonder, what can I do to make them better? Well, my friend, add Meow Greens to your cat's food for 90 days, and I guarantee you'll see changes that will amaze you. Greetings, I'm naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black, inventor of Meow Greens, and I invite you to take the Meow Greens 90-Day Challenge. In the first 30 days, you'll see shinier coats and increased energy. By day 60, your cat will have a stronger immune system, less shedding, improved joint function, all due to the live nutrients that you've added to their diet. And at 90 days, they're going to have better digestion, reduced inflammation, improved heart health, and you may even have reduced their cancer risk. Fetch a free Jumpstart trial bag for your cat today. Go to trymeowgreens.com. Use promo code TRYMEOW. That's TRYMEOW. You discover the shipping. You don't have to change your cat's food to improve your cat's health. Just add a packet of Meow Greens.